For more information on Ancient Dragon Zen Gate, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please visit our website.
The unsurpassed, profound, and wondrous Dharma is rarely met with, even in 100,000 million kalpas. Now I can see and hear it, accept and maintain it. May I unfold the meaning of the Tathagata's truth.
As you all know, many of you know, I think almost all of you were there in some form or another, last weekend was our first guiding Dharma teacher transition ceremony. And Taigen, our guiding teacher of almost two decades, stepped down and into an emeritus teacher role. And afterwards, I was installed like a piece of software as your guiding Dharma teacher. And I wanted to appreciate all of the work that went into this transition. It really was a great effort of so many beings, seen and unseen. Lots of them seen, running around here for months preparing for this event. And I want to appreciate the efforts of the Ancient Dragon Board, Bo here, board president, who is our amazing MC for the event. We're really lucky. Somebody said, it's like a natural. And then you said, oh, it's because I teach student kids all day. I'm calling on people. So it was really hurting all these cats called Zen students. So that was pretty amazing. And also, Mike Evans, our Tenzo, just did a seamless job. Paula and Dylan coordinated the affairs really great, putting up the party tent and taking it down. And everyone, really, the Tatas who aren't here, maybe it's Father's Day for some people, so happy Father's Day. And they did a great job. Taigen worked very hard on the ceremony and bringing everything together. So really, this entire Sangha came together for this event. And for me, what was striking was how each of us, in our own way, brought this full awareness in our bodies and in our caring hearts to bringing this transition process to some kind of fruition. And, you know, it's always interesting when there's a new thing, right? It's like falling in love. There's a lot of excitement, you know, and trepidation and maybe anxiety and desire. You know, there's a lot that's activated. And then when that falls away, or when the new thing is over, then sort of the work begins. So I thought I'd say a little bit about the work. So there's so much effort and energy that brought us to this process. But then when it was all done, after our lovely garden reception, we cleaned up. We put everything away. It was as if nothing had happened. And we just came back to sitting zazen together online and in person. We put away our party tent, we put away our ceremonial equipment, and then back to zazen. and the schedule, which just carries us along like a raft. And I am so proud of our community and of the connection that we have and our collective devotion to support each other. And I think we're supporting each other in a way that is to live in peace and harmony in the world, and beginning maybe with each other, which, you know, it's not always so easy for humans. In our practice, of course, we vow to awaken for the benefit of the whole world. And, you know, putting on a teacher transition is one thing, but it actually is a really hard call. But this is what we discover in our Shikan Taza. It's a rough world out there, and in here, in ourselves, at least in myself. I'm always amazed at what's going on in this mind. You know, fortunately, I know most things are just thoughts, just feelings. But in this rough world, it's so very easy to get off balance in our troubled world, in our troubled psyche. And in our practice, one of our things we pay attention to is, how are we meeting everything that comes to us? And we all know in our world, in our community in Chicago, in our internal psychological realities, whatever that is, there is a lot of human suffering and tragedy. You know, even in this neighborhood, there's gun violence. There's threats to basic safety, economic injustice, threats to human rights for immigrants, for women, for people of color, for queer folk. The list is endless for all of us. We all know about the situation in this world with war and violence and inequity. This is the world that we live in, of division and duality, wanting more of this and less of that, and this one's better and that one isn't. This is nonsense. And in this world gone crazy, a world of nonsensical suffering, right in the middle of that is where we live and practice. Well, the birds sound nice to me, but maybe they're in some huge fight, pecking at each other, trying to, like, you know, get one mate, steals one mate from another. Who knows? You know, what's going on there? But this is where we practice. And apparently this world's nonsense isn't anything terribly new. For me, I have been recently, for at least 20 years, so that's recent in my longer life, I've been practicing with this great text, old Buddhist text, and since most of you are pretty experienced practitioners, you may have heard of it, called the Flower Adornment Sutra, or Flower Ornaments Sutra. You know, we have a copy in one of the rooms here, and it's like this thick. So I didn't even bring it into the sendo. It's so heavy. But I'll say a few verses that struck me recently from chapter 9. So this was written, you know, almost 2 centuries ago by a Buddhist practitioner someplace, maybe in India. But these are the words of Buddha commenting. And it says something like this. Sentient beings that are people, right? Us people, whirl in a sea of craving and greed, shrouded by a web of ignorance. You know, sometimes I feel like I'm shrouded. in a web of ignorance. Maybe that's why I'm wearing like 30 yards of fabric. That's why a Zen priest has to wear so much fabric, because they're whirling in the sea of craving and greed, shrouded by the web of ignorance, terribly oppressed. The most benevolent, although this says this is a word for the Buddha, I'm kind of like the most benevolent, bravely cuts it all away and we vow as Buddhist practitioners to also do this, to join the Buddha. And so this verse says, this is the practice. This is the practice. Another, he continues and says, people, sentient beings, bob and sink in the ocean of existences. Their troubles are boundless. They have no place to rest. To make for these suffering people an ark of truth, which means a Dharma vehicle, to ferry them over to a place of peace. I'm adding a little to that, but to ferry them over, this is the practice. So what we're doing is we're making this ark of truth, this Dharma vehicle, together. When we sit together, when we eat together, when we put a party tent up together, when we take it down together, this is the practice, says the Fa Ornament Sutra. So in the work of our meditation, of our zazen, is learning how to respond to internal and external troubles, the boundless troubles, or the troubles that arc boundless. It's kind of a beautiful phrase, troubles that arc boundless. But maybe we shift that arc in zazen. In this learning of responding to internal and external troubles and internal and external delights. Both of them have their danger. And we respond in a way that liberates the troubles from their troubling aspects, the delights from destructive craving. Fundamental characteristic of Zen practice is wholehearted engagement in the work requested by the present moment. So you can think about this. What is the work requested in this moment? Moment after moment in your life. Can you hear it? Can you see it? Can you feel it? Can you touch it? What supports needing that? Last Saturday afternoon, the work was cleaning up after the party, or last Sunday, sorry, after cleanup after the party. That was the work. Today, maybe the work was to get our sleepy selves to zazen. You know, it's Pride weekend also. I think it's Pride weekend. Probably the party's this weekend? Next weekend. Yeah, so there's a preamble to that if it's next weekend, right? People are partying already. So queer people and their allies. And so some of us had to maybe get up out of bed early today to come to zazen. But this is the work of awakening. And one way to think of awakening is knowing the request of this moment. And then awakened activity is the work in response to the request. It's noticing the signs that point the way. In part of my process of transition and entering this role has been to talk to a lot of people about what it would mean to be a guiding teacher of ancient American Zen here. I'll probably continue that conversation endlessly, but But I asked a very venerable teacher, very senior practitioner, how do I do this job? And this person said, time to put on your magnanimous hat. I was like, isn't that great? I'm like, magnanimous hat. It's a great Dharma name for someone. And look for the signs. Look for those signs. You don't know. I think I said something like, how do I do this job that I don't know how to do? And this person said, well, just look for the signs. Something will appear that says, drink me, feed me, or eat me, and explore that. And I thought, yeah, that this work is to be spacious and caring and willing to step forward and pay attention to the signs and sometimes get them wrong. Sometimes I think we can see the signs a little better when we sit zazen. If we're lucky, if we're actually doing the work of zazen, of noticing what gets in the way and what supports this embodied presence and embodied response to the request of the moment. So we look around for the signs, for the Buddha way, this way. And we pick them up with our bodies and our hearts. We get to work on the cushion, we're settling into stillness, and then we devote ourselves to developing an embodied awareness. And you know that. You can sense that in people, maybe. Like somebody who's like, I'm doing the work, versus, let's find out what this work is to do. You can sense a different energy of different kinds of attitudes, bodily attitudes, emotional attitudes, interpersonal, relational attitudes. And there's not one way. But we know when somebody has a kind of upright embodied awareness that brings caring attention to the request of the present moment. So part of this work to find that way is, of course, internal, which in modern times, I don't see this in 2,000-year-old Buddhist writings, but I would say that's giving attention to our neuroses or our habits or coping mechanisms to deal with the trauma of being human, you might say, that can prevent us from seeing what's going on and prevent us from seeing what's needed in the moment. Like, how do we listen to the bird song or the rumble of the planes and the trains? Are we like, what kind of body do we bring to that? Or is it like, that bird song's so annoying. I don't like the way cardinals sound. Those robins. Or, I love it. I want more of it. I don't want to hear the plane. And we can just start to notice with love, actually, with openness and compassion. How do we listen? How do we respond? What awareness do we embody in response to suffering and delights of this world? We can add boredom and confusion there too. So I've been contemplating this flower adornment, this Avatamsaka Sutra, pretty intensely over the past year. It's kind of round two for me of swimming in this text for an extended period of time. And I think zazen is helpful and key and a foundation for us. But contemplating the teachings of Buddha, whether they're ancient or contemporary, is part of our practice. You know, reading them, feeling that our way with them, being encouraged by them. And so the Avatamsaka Sutra, the Flower Adornment Sutra, is an old teaching said to be the words of the Buddha that is really kind of like a training manual or a job training manual for bodhisattvas. How do we live in a way that cares for the world? How do people who vow to develop an embodied awareness, this awareness that responds with caring and attention to the request, intention and attention. Our bow is a kind intention to the request of the present moment. How does that happen? So I'll read a couple things. I have a little bit of time to do this. I'll just read a few more passages here. So there's a section in chapter 9 that ends with, this is what work should be done. Keeps repeating that as its last line. This is what work should be done. Another translation of that is one should engage in deeds such as these. But it's kind of pointing to our work, our bodhisattva activity. Taiten has referred to this as the Buddha work, but I think we can drill down a little and take some wisdom from the Avatamsaka Sutra. The very first verse says, arouse the mind of great compassion, determined to rescue and protect all beings. And then it says something kind of interesting, and forever go beyond the multitudes of humans and devas, which are heavenly beings. One should engage in deeds such as these. Or this is the work should be done. And I thought it's kind of interesting to say go beyond the multitudes of humans and devas, because isn't that who we're protecting? But I think this is encouraging us to go beyond our prejudices and our preferences and our stuckness to nonsense and to this is a sentient being, this isn't, this is a human, this is a deva, this is a good person, this is a bad person, this is a weed, and this is a flower. To act not stuck in that position, but from a deeper truth of our interconnectedness. So we're encouraged to root ourselves in great compassion. Another verse that I've been practicing with, and one way to practice these is to write them, to speak them, to remember them, to memorize them. There's lots of ways. And I've been working actually with two different translations. There's a more recent translation, and then there's a classic translation for all you Avatamsaka aficionados. So this one says, in all actions of one's awesome deportment, this is like bodily attitudes, always bear in mind the meritorious qualities of the Buddha, never ceasing to do so for a moment, whether night or day. One should engage in deeds such as these. Another translation, Cleary's translation, says, in all manner of activities, always remembering the Buddha's virtues, without ever a lapse, day or night, this is what work should be done. This is like a lot of work to remember. Sometimes it's hard to remember to be a kind person, to be an open person, to be a flexible person. This is Buddha. This is the virtues of Buddha. To contribute to healing instead of division. You know, I often think to myself, do I want to wake up or do I want to continue suffering? So, you can think for yourself, what are the Buddha's virtues? Or what are the virtues of the kind of awakening that we're engaging in our Christians? And then to remember those in our bodies, our bodily activity. Without ever a lapse. This is what work should be done. I think I'll go back to putting up a party tent and preparing for a transition. Because these are pretty demanding. Here's another one, and maybe I'll stop after this. With a mind that regards beings equally and does not give rise to any discriminations, enter the realm of reality. One should engage in deeds such as this. Another translation, a mind seeing beings as equal, not creating discrimination, entering the realm of real truth. This is what work should be done. So, you know, in our modern times, when we're looking to live a life that supports all beings and move beyond the petty workings of our minds that like to value one thing over another and see one person's skin color or one person's desire as better or worse than another. Seeing the reality that we're all connected intimately and all worthy of care. That's real truth. You know, there's a lot of truth distortion now in our culture, but we're truth distorters too. This is just what we have to do to live sometimes, you know. We have to know if a berry is poisonous or not. But still, there's a way to live, not creating discrimination. Okay, I have one more. But I promise, this is the last. Among the atoms of all lands everywhere, no, not among, actually, this is the atoms of all lands everywhere, are each and every one a Buddha, each one awakening. To be able to know their number, this is what work should be done. I don't know any physicist, maybe somebody has calculated how many atoms there are in the entire universe and the awakened aspect of every one of them. But this is a kind of intimacy with the world at hand. You know, yesterday I was in my garden and out of the corner of my eye, I saw something red. I thought, oh, that's an unusual berry. It was a backyard strawberry that volunteered. I didn't plant it, it just appeared. And in that strawberry, every atom is a Buddha. You know, but I also was intimate with the strawberry. I didn't pick it and eat it. I just left it. Maybe a bird loves it. I'm like, how did you get here? How did I even notice you? Because it was attached, you know, to this little strawberry plant that I didn't plant, that just showed up. That I could have pulled out as a weed, but I remember noticing it going, oh, I kind of like the way that looks. And then all of a sudden this appears. We don't know the miracles this world has, but all of it is Buddha from the perspective of awakening. So this is knowing the request of this moment, and this awakened activity that we support in each other is the work of the response to that request. Maybe I would have picked a need that. That could have been a response. Maybe I would have offered it to someone else. So we support each other in this work of awakening, centered in vows, centered in these wonderful Buddhist teachings that we have. And we learn together how to do this hard work of meeting life with awareness, peace, flexibility, and caring, breath by breath, little by little. It's okay if we don't seem to get it right. You know, if something arises that's self-centered or divisive, but, you know, our way is we just breathe, we sit with it, and we just keep finding the way, finding our true way. And this is a life that is inconceivably in accord with all being. And each of us has to discover that ourselves. So I think that's maybe plenty from this being. And I'd just like to invite anyone's response to anything you've heard today. And Bo will help. So please offer your response if you have one. Thank you very much.
Yeah, so feel free to do the raised hand emoji or raise your real hand.
Oh, is that you?
I should raise the emoji hand.
You should raise your hand.
Yeah. I have kind of a practical question about the flower ornament sutra. I have it, yeah. And it's been like sitting on my desk. It's big. It's a monster. And so I'm just like, I've been curious about how to approach it as a text, as something to study, you know, since I've kind of had it. So yeah, that was kind of my question, is like, I have in my head, well, just read it through, but I don't know that that's kind of the best approach to it necessarily. So I'm wondering if you had a recommendation mm-hmm. for, you know, how to practice with it as a giant text.
Well, it is massive, but there's a method to the madness. And there are a couple ways to approach it. One is you can just randomly go any place and start reciting it and see what grabs you.
Mm-hmm.
I know you've probably been in that recitation group, haven't you?
No, you haven't. No, I haven't.
So the first recommendation I have is just to chant the whole thing, which I did. That was my first round. And then discuss it with my teacher. But I also think it's helpful to get oriented to the text, because even though it's a compendium of many things, its goal, it really is a bodhisattva training manual, and it is the foundation of the ideas of the net of Indra, the interconnectedness that between all phenomenon and how that expresses something beyond our conceptions. So it kind of packs in a lot in there. Like all the teachings of the Paramitas are in there. But it kind of also, it works to blow your mind a little bit. Because when you think of things like, I could put up a party tent and have a guided teacher ceremony, even though that seemed impossible maybe a year ago. But when you start to be like, oh, I'm going to know all the atoms and all the lands everywhere and each and everyone as a Buddha, all of a sudden it's kind of like Drano for the ego. Like you realize, I can't do that. Or I can't even conceive of doing that. Then you move to a different place where you can shed some stuff, I think. And then you're actually floating in the sea of the sutra, which is supporting you. So that's one way to think about it. But I do think in the there's online, there's a Kalavinga translation by, I think, Dharmamitra. And that's a newer translation, and they have a summary of it. And also in the introduction, Thomas Cleary has a summary. And it's good to take that kind of seriously, because there's images of banners and parasols and flowers and light emitting from Buddha's feet and light emitting from Buddha's head. And, you know, you can be like, what? But those are symbols of teachings, of awakening, of, you know, the phenomenal world, spiritual powers, you know. And we don't want to get like, oh my gosh, I have this special power. But you actually do develop kind of superpowers as bodhisattvas. You even sit for 5 minutes on a cushion. How many people can do that? Especially in this day and age, without looking at their phone, you know? But I'm sure it was probably true long ago. So I think sometimes it's good to kind of think of it a little bit textually, like you would read any literature. I mean, you have a degree in literature, I think, or writing, and, you know? But also to sort of start to see the different chapters or different, what do they call it, sections of it, have different foci, you know, and then think about, like you would read anything, what's the setting, who are the characters, what's taking place. So then you can start to, you know, you can give your analytical mind a little bit of Dharma to chew on, you know, and then you can go back into it. And yeah, so that's just one way. Mm-hmm. Copying it. Some people copy. Maybe I'll get to do that before I die. That would be a wonderful thing. But you can see just from how I was talking, like I just am like, wait a minute. The mind that regards these equally and does not give rise to any discrimination. I'm like, what kind of mind is that? What kind of being does that? You know? And then I'm like, maybe I'll try that out. I kind of would like to be like that. I don't want to add more suffering to this world. And, you know, I think that there are some people's place in the world maybe to make suffering, so I have something to work with. I don't know. But we're all working together in a certain way. And so we're here for some reason, together here. We chose to be here and not someplace else. So this is the work. So I don't know if that helps you, Bo.
It does, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But don't be afraid to treat it like a text.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, and also one that's like a crazy text that is a compendium. You know, like, I don't know if any of you have done this, but when I study the teachings, I'll like make quotes, write out quotes, and then my thoughts about them. And then, but you know, I have tons of these notes. Not very organized. And I think that this is kind of what people were practicing with that made some of these sutras.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe somebody found somebody else's notes, you know, in some cave, some monk's cave someplace. But I think of it, these are alive. It wasn't like one person in their thing, their little monk's hole doing all this, mm-hmm. you know. I just heard what Buddha said, so I'm doing it, you know. I think these were coming about from people's lives and what they were practicing with. So you can then start to translate them into what that means for us today in our language.
Mm-hmm.
That's another possibility. So that's a practical long-winded answer. David Ray, what do you thought?
Thank you, Hogetsu. I kind of want to follow up because Jerry and I just came back, just the day before the transition ceremony. We were in a session with Rev Anderson, who, among other things, blew our minds about the Flower Ornament Sutra, which I had been participating in the reading, and it's been wonderful. I would say that my experience has been more smoking the Flower Ornament Sutra than reading it, because it is psychedelic. So I would sit there for an hour and a half in our reading group, and it felt so amazing the way that my mind felt.
Mm-hmm.
Rev brought, you know, just alive these connections between other texts that we chant and
right.
the Book of Serenity, and now I'm starting to dip a little bit into Thomas Cleary's writing, what's it called, Entry into the Inconceivable, something
Entry
like that.
Inconceivable.
Something like that, and to understand that, I've been hearing it said that Huayin, that flower ornament Buddhism is the basis and ground and, you know, of Soto Zen.
Right.
And it's like, it is the teaching of such. And I also want to say, Hogetsu, thank you for bringing, you know, thank you for pulling on the thread of the sutra that is... you know, the question of how do I want to live? What kind of life is the appropriate response to the teaching of such?
Mm-hmm.
So thank you. And Reb said a thing that I want to say, and that is homage to the Buddha Flower Ornament Sutra.
Thank you. So I'm glad you're moving from smoking. Because this is, I think, a misrepresentation of this text and the dangerous quality of it, that it can feel intoxicating because it's full of flowers and light and imagery that we in our time think of as, you know, like an acid trip or, you know, psychedelic. And I think of it as holographic. or of expanding, of giving us an entry into how maybe a Buddha sees the world, or certainly how a very senior level bodhisattva. So like I'm in the customer service department of the bodhisattva, even though like people might think I'm a little bit of the CEO of Ancient Dragon. But you know, like the Flower Ornament Sutra is a great challenge. And the beauty of it also is the last chapter is this like extravaganza of this seeker meeting all sorts of people to learn. There are mathematicians, prostitutes, children, dragon, night goddesses, meeting all sorts of people and learning wholeheartedly from them. And we could write our own sutra. Every single person could be in this room, in this world, is a character. But it's very easy to get into this spaced out mode with it, which is great, because sometimes it's good to go into, you know, psychedelic experiences as an entry into opening up. You know, they're exploring that now. But we can be careful with the text. That's why I say it's good to actually study it with the teacher. And I think to really be careful sometimes. You know, the Lotus Sutra is often seen as like a primary text of Soto Zen, for various reasons, but I think, David Ray, that's correct, that the Avatamsaka Sutra is our text in some ways, because it is about this intimate interconnectedness of that each thing itself, each molecule, each atom, each subatomic particle is awakening in some ways. And also, its thrust is how do we live in a way that accords with the world in its totality, which we can't conceive of with our human minds. Maybe AI will. I'll have to feed the Ornament Sutra to AI and see what happens, you know. Maybe we can do that someday in here for a Dharma talk. We can talk to ChatGPT about the Ornament Sutra. But, you know, this is only to encourage you about what work it is to be done. So I hope I'm not a downer after our big party and I'm like, time to get to work. We've got a lot of work to do. But I have a lot of work to do. I don't know about you. Mm-hmm. And I'm up for it totally. And the Flower Ornament Sutra, with its spaciousness, is an ocean of support for me. It might not be for you. It might not be your cup of tea. But I say write your own Flower Ornament Sutra. We're about done with our time, so maybe we'll talk more about this on another occasion. I just want to say hi also to Brian and Susanna, who have moved, and you have this beautiful hanging behind you that feels so Southwest. So, and Mark and Karen and Kirky, great to see. Is it Los Cruces, New Mexico? Another part. Hope you're not too hot there. I hear it's going to be hot. And everyone else, Nathan and Micah and Chris, who I saw yesterday, and Anastasia, who saw that. Thank you, everyone, very much. I'm going to sign off, and I think we're going to do announcements after that, but we're going to do our four vows. So, goodbye online.
Beings are numberless. We vow to free them. Delusions are inexhaustible. We vow to cut through them. Dharma gates are boundless. We vow to enter them. Buddha's ways unsurpassable, we vow to realize it. Beings are numberless, we vow to free them. Delusions are inexhaustible. We vow to cut through them. Dharma gates are boundless. We vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. We vow to realize it. Beings are numberless. We vow to free them. Delusions are inexhaustible. We vow to cut through them. Dharma gates are boundless. We vow to enter them. O Buddha's way is unsurpassable. We vow to realize it.